Genesis 16. Did I already ask you who wants to have a baby when you're 100 years old? Sarai, Abram's wife, bare him no children, and she had a handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar. Look at this right here. I want you to read this now. And Sarah said, y'all see that? Whose idea was it? Is her idea. Guys, take note of this. Just because it's her idea doesn't mean it's safe. Just because it's her idea doesn't mean you should go along with it. And it turned into a mess, didn't it? And let's be honest. Let's be reasonable. We want our wives to be happy. And so, amen. And so we try to go along. We want to get along. Unless there's some absolute reason we shouldn't do it, we want to go with your ideas, ladies. And Abram, when Sarai came to him and said, I got an idea, he said, speak. And Sarai said unto Abram, behold, now the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee, go into my handmaid. It may be that I, see that? I. So the idea that she's floating is that the child that is born will be her child. That she will love him as her own. And honestly, let's be plain this morning. Your idea of what marriage was going to be and what it is not the same. And your idea of parenting and what it turned out to be are not the same. Is that true?
Amen.
It turned out, we had these ideas, these visions in our mind of what it would be like. It didn't turn out that way. Of course, mine's much better. But that's the way it is. We have this idea, and Sarai says, well, if you'll take my handmaid and have a child, then it'll be like, we'll just be one big happy family. Right? Is that what she said? That's what she said. And in her mind, that's how it would be. She loves, understand where this is coming from. She loves her husband. She wants him to be happy. She says that her situation is keeping him from being happy. So if you'll do this, we can all be happy. Yeah. But she sincerely, that's what she thought would happen. No, oh, good question, but no. The answer is no. The answer is no. Because it wasn't forbidden. Let me go ahead and explain it. In the Old Testament, in the Old Testament, the Bible dictates, and I'd have to give you the reference for it, you can have as many wives as you can afford. Solomon, that's why Solomon had so many. One was too much, wasn't it? So, amen. So, I don't even know what that means. So in the Old Testament, you could have as many wives as you could afford. But here's the deal. You know this idea about alimony, and I know people don't like the idea of alimony and hear a bunch of arguments about it. But God dictated, you take her on as your wife, you're responsible for her relief or financial needs the rest of her life. Till death do us part. And that's why alimony is a biblical concept. Okay, I don't know a lot of details about alimony, but it's a biblical concept because once you, what's that? I'm not going to say that on camera. But that's the reality. You were obligated in the Old Testament, you were obligated for them as long as they live. They were, like Sarah says here in Miami, we're just a family. And that's how it was. So they had many wives. This was not, we look at Moses, we look at Abraham, we look at all these David, Solomon, all these guys had many wives, several wives. And as long as they could afford them, it was acceptable. It's there. But it was her idea. Okay, so we're there. We're there. It's her idea. She thought it was a good idea. She thought about this plan, figured it out, and in her mind, it would all work out no problem. And she suggested to him, he wants her to be happy. He feels like, because she's the one, the Lord has kept me from bearing. You see what she says? So she says, I'm missing something. And because I'm missing something, you're missing something. And if we get this, if we do this, we'll all be happy. That's her mindset. She really believes that's the case. How many of you ever thought, if I just get that, whatever it was, boat, car, camper, house, shoes, purse, whatever it was. You said, if I just get that, I'll be satisfied. How many of you ever thought that? And then how many of you, after you had it, you said, well, I'm still not satisfied. It didn't feel the need. It just didn't. It might have filled it for a day or a week or a month. But at some point you realize, well, that's not really what's going to satisfy me or complete me or fulfill me. And that's the reality. But that was her idea. It was her idea. And Abraham, verse the end of verse 2, hearkened to the voice of Sarai. Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife. Okay? So to answer the question, not adultery. What's the difference? That now he's obligated. He's obligated to her. There's a contract, a covenant, a marriage covenant. So they're married. Now, verse 4, he went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. What was not figured into Sarai's plan? Hagar's attitude. Hagar said, this is my baby, and I could do something you couldn't do. And so now the bond between me and Abram is stronger than the bond between you and Abram. She despised her. It was Hagar's attitude. No matter what we do, no matter how we plan, we always have to consider the variable of other people, of other people's attitude, of other people's emotions. Do you think Hagar felt that she was going to feel this way afterwards? No, she just felt this way. She despised Sarai. Verse 5, Sarai said to Abraham, it's your fault. My wrong be upon thee. You should have talked me out of this. You should have raised an objection. It's his fault. He can't get away from it, right? What's he got? My wrong be upon thee. I have given my handmaid into thy bosom, and when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and thee. So now it's religious. Now it's a spiritual matter. You should have talked me out of it. And God's going to judge you for it. You should have known better than to do what I told you to do. This is like real life, isn't it? Verse 6, but Abram said to Sarai, behold, thy maid is in thy hand. Do to her as pleaseth thee. Abram says, you're still the boss. Do whatever you want to do. Now, this is his wife. Both of them are his wives. And he's stuck in the middle. And he says, she's yours. You're the one that had this relationship with her. You're the one that had this idea. Do what you want to do. It wasn't my plan. It's yours. Do what you want. When Sarai, verse 6, last part, and when Sarai dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face. How many of you have ever been around an angry woman? You better go guard the door. So he turns it back to her. She goes to Hagar, deals harshly with her. You should have known, but I thought you were my friend. This is your idea. And so it's all turned around. Why? Because Sarai had a bad idea. There are bad ideas, and then there are bad ideas. This was a terrible idea. No, especially not one this big. You understand, this changed history. Well, I say it changed history. It formed history. This is the point where two paths were formed. The angel of the Lord, verse 7, the angel of the Lord found Hagar by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way to Shur, and he said to Hagar, Sarai's maid, whence comest thou, and whither wilt thou go? And she said, I flee from the face of my mistress Sarai. The angel of the Lord said unto her, return to thy mistress, submit thyself under her hands. Okay, who's this? It's Jesus. Okay, so the angel of the Lord, the physical presence of God, the physical manifestation of God. I know it says the angel of the Lord, and a lot of times the Old Testament it does, and you'll be able to see further in the text why it's so convincing that it's Jesus and not Gabriel or somebody else, not an angel per se. A messenger, angel just means messenger of the Lord. The angel of the Lord said unto her, I will multiply thy seed, he's talking to Hagar, exceedingly, that it shall not be numbered for multitude. And so what's that say in verse 10? I will. I will. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, behold, thou art with child, and shall bear a son, and shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord hath heard thy affliction. And that's the definition of Ishmael, is God hears, or God shall hear. And so in the Bible, when you have a name, and he says, name him this, because that's usually what the word actually translates out to be. The Lord hath heard thy affliction, verse 12. And he will be a wild man. Oh. And his hand will be against every man. So there's something, you know, there's something in him that causes him to not get along with people. Okay, that's right here. His hand will be against every man, and every man's hand against him. So he's also a man who other people don't like. And shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. So he's not going to flee. He's not going to some far place. He's going to stay right there. Guys, what we have going on, and by the way, have you seen this miraculous time in which we live? Guys, if you're not awake looking at what's going on and comparing it to the book of Revelation and Ezekiel and Daniel, and what times we live in, and you can say what you want to about our president, but these deals between Arabs and Jews are getting signed and getting worked out. I'm not talking about one deal like Jimmy Carter had or like Bill Clinton had. I'm talking about deals all around. And guys, we're lining up here. We are lining up. You talk about coexist, we're lining up. So that when, and you see what's happening with us, guys, it's just so exciting when you think about it. I know it's very easy to get discouraged about what's going on in our world, but when you look at it from a spiritual viewpoint with end times in mind, you realize that all of this stuff is falling into place. including what has united the world? A vaccine. A vaccine. Oh, and so it's united the world. How hard would it be for somebody with so much authority, with so much power, to have a following? Guys, I'm telling you, you better get right, stay right, get your friends right, because we're there. So he'll be a wild man. He'll stay in the presence. So the Arabs and the Jews, he'll stay in the presence of his brethren. Verse 13, she called the name of the Lord that spake unto her, Thou God seest me. For she said, Have I also here looked after him that seeth me? So I've seen the one that sees me, right? And she named a well there by that name. Verse 14, Beer Laharoi. It is between Kadesh and Bered, and Hagar bare Abram a son, and Abram called his son's name, which Hagar bare, Ishmael. And Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bare Ishmael to Abraham. So he's 86 years old. Anybody want to have a kid at 86? Now, we skip. What happens between verse 16 and verse 1 of chapter 17? 13 years. And we have to understand that with the Bible. We read about in the Bible about these people and we think, wow, what fantastic lives. For 13 years, God says nothing worth writing about. By the way, at what age was Abram when he got called out of Ur? 75 years old. So for 75 years, nothing to write home about. And now with another 13-year gap and quite a few gaps of years in between. So don't feel like, you know, God's not using me because nothing's going on in my life right now. There's gaps. There's times when there's nothing, no red letter days. Abram was 90 years and 9. The Lord appeared to Abram. Again, he appeared to him. This is the presence of God. This is Jesus. And said unto him, I am the Almighty God. Walk before me and be thou perfect. And I will make my covenant between me and thee and will multiply thee exceedingly. And Abram fell on his face, and God talked with him, saying, As for me, behold, my covenant is with thee. Okay? With thee. Thou shalt be a father of many nations. Neither shall thy name any more be called Abram, but they shall be Abraham, for a father of many nations have I made thee. And I will make thee exceeding fruitful. I will make nations of thee, and kings shall come out of thee. So understand something. With his sons, he's saying that there will be nations, leaders, kings. And I will establish my covenant between me and thee, and thy seed after thee, in their generations, for an everlasting covenant. Is that covenant still in force? It's everlasting. So the covenant's still there. To be a God unto thee, and to thy seed after thee. Verse 8, I will give unto thee, and to thy seed after thee, the land wherein thou art a stranger, all the land of Canaan, an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. Is it still their land? Everlasting possession. God said unto Abram, Thou shalt keep my covenant. Therefore thou and thy seed after thee and their generations. And this is my covenant which ye shall keep between me and you and thy seed after thee, that every man child among you shall be circumcised. So that is a token of the covenant. It reminds them who they are. It reminds them of God's commitment to them. Now, does it save them to be circumcised? No. It's a token of a covenant. That's what it is. It's a token of covenant. Now, God judged those who did not in this, you know, in the Old Testament who were not circumcised. We can remember the incident with Moses. But when we get to the New Testament, remember Timothy was a Samaritan, half Jew, half Gentile. He was not circumcised. And it became an issue because the Jews wanted to check. They said, he's not one of us. He doesn't have the covenant. He doesn't have the sign. And Timothy got circumcised. He said, nope, I'll do it. Did it save his soul? Nope. What did it do? It satisfied the critics. Now you say, well, I don't know if that was worth it. But that's the deal. Sometimes we go to extraordinary measures to satisfy the critics. And Timothy did. Why? Because it was more important to him to be able to minister. Now, when you want to, I heard a preacher say one time, he said, if I believe that God wanted me to join a church, that's what God made clear to me, that he wanted me to join a church, and that church said, in order to join the church, you got to jump off the roof, I'd do it. Now, he said, I wouldn't think it's right. I wouldn't think it's spiritual, biblical, the right thing to do, but if I believe that was the only hurdle keeping me from fulfilling God's will, I would do it. Now, as far as I know, we don't have any hurdles here. You get saved and you want to get baptized, we baptize you, period. But that's this circumcision, this token, this sign became a real conflict all the way through the generations. And we see today it's there are people who are absolutely opposed to this. You see, do you notice that? Does it surprise you? They're opposed to everything God came up with. And they're opposed to this too. Verse 12, he that is 8 days old shall be circumcised. He that is born in the house, bought with money, of any stranger which is not of thy seed. He that is born in thy house, verse 13, that is bought with money, must needs be circumcised, and my covenant shall be in your flesh for an everlasting covenant. So everybody, not just the Jews, not just the ones that were born as part of that of Abraham's generations, but even their slaves, anybody that lived there had to be circumcised. And that was the deal. Because God's covenant was with Abraham and all of his generations. And one thing that people don't understand, and God was very strict on some things in the Old Testament, in the development of the nation, and that's the point. He was developing a nation. And he had a very low tolerance for deviation from the rules. Very low tolerance. When you try to get going and you got to get everything organized, everybody orderly, everybody on board, everybody following the rules. And so he was very demanding of that in this period of time as he developed Israel. Verse 14, the uncircumcised man-child whose flesh of his foreskin is not circumcised, that soul shall be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant. So what was it? In most cases, whose decision is it that in all cases, whose decision is it that a baby is circumcised? The parents' decision. I say all circumstances. It may not be that way. But it's the parents' decision. So if a boy was not circumcised because of his parents' decision, he was cut off, but what could he do? And his soul was cut off from the inheritance, from the blessing, from the covenant of the generations. So what could he do to correct that? He gets circumcised. And so at some point in his life, it would become a personal decision. But what does it indicate? If he's not circumcised, it indicates rebellion on his parents' part. That they said, we are not going to identify with this. Now, let me be clear before somebody goes home and asks questions. This is not a covenant with us and God. Circumcision, the Bible, the New Testament is very clear. circumcision or no circumcision has no impact on our spiritual condition. This was an Old Testament covenant between God and Abraham and his generation. So don't run off and call your surgeon this afternoon if this is not something that you need. He goes on in verse 15, and God said to Abraham, as for Sarai, thy wife, thou shalt not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall her name be. I will bless her, give thee a son also of her. Did you see that? I will give thee a son also of her. I will bless her. She shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall be of her. And Abram fell on his face and laughed. Why did he do that? Because he was human, wasn't he? He was the friend of God, the father of nations, the father of faith. But he said, I've already got one, now you want me to have two? 99 years old. Absolutely. I had always said, we don't raise girls around here. And God said, I heard that. Yeah, now I have two, huh? He fell upon his face and laughed. He said in his heart, shall a child be born to him that is 100 years old? Shall Sarah that is 90 years old bear? And so the question was posed last week. We looked at Sarah being 65. Remember, they went down into Egypt, and she was 65 years old. And Lana says, well, she must have been beautiful at 65 years old. And she was. And people say, well, is it really, I mean, are these years, or this, is this age really the age? Abraham looks and says, she's 90 years old. She's not having a kid. And this is Jesus. This is Lord talking to Abraham. And Abraham loses. That just happens sometimes, doesn't it? You mean a serious conversation and something just hits you wrong and you can't help it. And you start laughing and you try to hold. He just fell on his face. He thought that was outrageous. And it was. Guys, we need to understand that what is outrageous to us is very doable for God. God is able. He could solve this little conflict she was having with Hagar. But understand something. This is, you know, taking a step back, understand. None of this was God writing a script as it went. This was already in the books. This was already planned. All of it. Ishmael, Isaac, it was all already in the books. God already had it. He just hadn't told them yet. Remember as they were walking to Sodom and Gomorrah, or down that way, and God says, Jesus says, should I tell Abraham what I'm about to do? Right? Because he already knew he was going to do. The only question was, when was he going to let Abraham in on it? And when it comes to life and what God's going to do and what God's plan is, it doesn't surprise God. God's not shocked. He doesn't say, oh, I wasn't expecting that. No, the only question is, when's he going to let us know what's going to happen? He fell upon his face and laughed, and he questioned that. Verse 18, Abram said unto God, oh, that Ishmael might live before thee. Abraham says, let's just count the one we already got. Let's just use this one. We already got him. He's already here. And see, in Abraham's mind, Sarah's going to get over her hard feelings. And Hagar's going to get over her sour disposition. In his mind, it'll all work out. If we just stick to what we got. Let's not change it again. What is Abraham? Abraham knows that if he's got two sons from two different women, there's going to be conflict. He knows that. And so he says, let's just leave it like it is. Oh, that Ishmael might live before thee. Verse 19, God said, Sarah, thy wife, shall bear thee a son indeed. Thou shalt call his name Isaac, and I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant and with his seed after him. As for Ishmael, I have heard thee. Remember, it's interesting he keeps saying it because Ishmael means God has heard. As for Ishmael, I have heard thee. I have blessed him and will make him fruitful, multiply him exceedingly. 12 princes shall he beget. I will make of him a great nation. But my covenant will I establish with Isaac, which Sarah shall bear thee at the set time in the next year. And he left off talking with him, and God went up from Abraham. He left. And Abram took Ishmael, his son, and all that were born in his house, every male, and circumcised them. And Abraham was 99 years old, verse 24, when he was circumcised. So, I guess the biggest point here, I mean, besides just the history of the covenant of circumcision with God and the Jewish people, is to know that when God says something to us, speaks something to us, he means it. And when somebody has an idea, a suggestion, try to work out all the pieces. Because just because your wife says this is what's going to make her happy, or just because your husband says this is what's going to make him happy, doesn't mean it is. And so remember, after it happened, Sarah said, you should have stopped me. You should have thought this through. You should have told me no. So sometimes it's uncomfortable. How many of you ever have to tell your kids no? Better. Got to tell our kids no. Got to tell our parents no. Got to tell our spouse no. Sometimes we just have to say no. Because they don't always work out the way we imagine it. Let's take a break.